to any department store, Walmart, Walgreens, Dollar General, what do you see lining every aisle? Easter stuff. The Easter eggs, the Easter candy, that green weird grass stuff. You see Easter everywhere you go. This is the week. But I hope that this week you make it something more than the eggs, the candy, the Easter grass, the Easter baskets, the Easter bunny. But I hope this week that you make it about Jesus, as was mentioned in our meditation this morning, that this week is more than those things. Just as Christmas is hyped up, Easter sometimes lags behind. But without Easter, the birth of Jesus is little more than just the birth of another person. Jesus made it unique through his death and his resurrection. And this morning, we're going to look at two tables. We're going to look at two tables that were uniquely different, however. Two tables in two different locations. One table was located in a house in Bethany, a small town outside of Jerusalem, on a Saturday. The second table was a table in the upper room in Jerusalem on a Thursday evening for a very special meal. One table was a table of worship and Jesus being served. The other table was a table of Jesus doing the serving. These two tables are in different locations, different days, and had different meanings, but nonetheless, when we tie them together, they teach us something about Jesus and who he is and how we are to respond to him and how Jesus has already responded towards us and how different that should make our lives. And so this morning, we're going to look in Matthew chapter 26, in that chapter for our main verses this morning. We're going to start in verse 6. We'll read together here, and it'll be on the screen as well. While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured out on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. "Why this waste?" they asked. "This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor." Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." And so the scene is this. Jesus is on his way back to Jerusalem for the final time, and he makes a pit stop in Bethany, a small town, outside of the larger Jerusalem, where you might say the important people are. Bethany was a small town that was insignificant. No important people lived there. Important people did not go there. But nonetheless, Jesus makes a stop at Simon the leper's home. Simon invites him in. Of course he would. He had healed Simon. And Jesus was very meaningful to him. He was very thankful for Jesus. And he goes to Simon's house to share a meal. He's surrounded in a room around a table with his closest friends, especially the 12 disciples, who had spent a little over 3 years learning at the feet of the Son of God, following him wherever he goes, messing up at times, but showing themselves to be a real workman in the kingdom work of God at other times. But nonetheless, they gather in this home on this Saturday to share a meal. You got to think about Simon for a minute. This is his home. It's not the most popular idea to welcome a wanted man into your house. Jesus was known as a wanted man. There were those in Jerusalem who wanted him dead. And they were figuring out and plotting ways to accomplish this. But Simon doesn't let this deter him from inviting Jesus into his home. During the last week of Jesus' life, he had the opportunity to go to several people's homes. If you recall, the last week of Jesus' life, he was welcomed into the high priest's home. Oh, what a beautiful home. The high priest was probably the most wealthy Jew in all of Jerusalem and all of Israel. 5 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, a beautiful overlook of the valley, looking down from the city of Jerusalem. Probably had vineyards as far as the eye could see. What a beautiful, beautiful home. But Jesus didn't feel welcomed there. He didn't feel welcomed at all. Herod's palace. Jesus was taken to Herod's palace. What a beautiful place. Probably servants going about their business, serving Herod. There was probably a table with wine and grapes on it. The people with the fans, fanning people. You might think back when you've seen the Ten Commandments movie with Charlton Heston. What a beautiful palace. What a wonderful place. But the only thing that Herod wanted to see was Jesus turn some tricks. Do a magic trick. I've heard you can do these things. Do something for me. Prove to me who you are. Jesus wasn't welcome there either. And then Jesus goes to Pilate's home. To go before Pilate. What an honor to stand before this man who ruled the people of Israel. What an honor. Pilate could have shown the greatest mercy towards Jesus. Jesus was being taken as a criminal, put on trial, a mockery. Every rule that the Pharisees and the Sadducees had, they broke them just so that they could say that Jesus was a guilty man. But they needed Pilate to okay things. He could have shown mercy towards Jesus, but he didn't. Where did Jesus feel welcome? He felt welcome at a poor man's home in a small town that no one cared about, Simon the leper in Bethany. Simon welcomed him in. And then there was the 12-ounce jar of perfume. We know by reading the Gospel of John, he records this story as well in a different light. And he names the woman as Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus. She shows up at Simon's home to also join in this fellowship time with Jesus. But she brings along with her this 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume. It tells us that it was worth a year's wage, this amount of perfume. The average individual income in Pana is just a little less than $30,000 a year. Could you imagine giving all of your income for 1 year over? But that's what this woman did. Through an extravagant act of worship, pouring this out upon Jesus' head. Those who were in the room, as we read, thought, this is ridiculous. This is a waste. Why would you do something like this? But I think Mary understood something the rest of these people in that room did not understand. She understood the power of Jesus' words. Because she remembered when her brother Lazarus had died and Jesus was called for and he waited a few days to come. And by the time he had gotten there, her brother was dead, laid in a tomb. When Jesus got there, the sisters were beside themselves, even upset with Jesus for not coming sooner. And with mere words, Jesus spoke, Lazarus, come out. She knew that Jesus' words were important. She'd also heard Jesus say that he would die, that he would be handed over to wicked men and be crucified. And so when she showed up that day, she showed up not to just have a meal with Jesus, but she had in mind to do an extravagant act of worship in front of all of these people. How many of you ladies carry perfume in your purse that's worth about a year's wage? Probably no one. And that's not something that Mary would have been doing either. She showed up with that alabaster jar of perfume for a purpose. And just imagine with me for a moment, as they're around the table, enjoying a meal, sharing in conversation. Perhaps Jesus is teaching some more. Perhaps some of the disciples are remarking about something that, remember the feeding the 5,000? I mean, could you imagine the stories that they could share with one another? And Mary comes up behind Jesus. We might think Jesus would be unsuspecting, but we know better. Jesus would have known her thoughts and her motives long before she did them. And he allowed her to pour. She took the cap off that perfume and started to pour it. I'm sure those sitting around the table knew exactly what it was in her hand, and there was a gasp in the room and probably a silent silence, perhaps an awkward silence. Yet she poured out over Jesus' head this perfume. It came down Jesus' hair. It soaked into his tunic, his clothing. It absorbed into his skin. The aroma filled the room. I just wonder, a few days later, Jesus would be arrested. And while Jesus is before the Pharisees, if he ever just smelled that perfume and remembered that act of worship. Because Jesus probably only owned one tunic. And what he was wearing on Saturday was probably the same thing he was wearing when the crown of thorns was placed down on his head and his clothes were stripped and he was beaten. Perhaps the smell of the perfume was still soaked into Jesus' skin. And I wonder if he smelled that perfume and remembered that extravagant act of worship, and it encouraged him to keep moving forward. Jesus' clothes were put back on him after his beating. He's led to carry his cross through the streets of Jerusalem. And I wonder from time to time if he caught the aroma of that perfume that was poured out on him and that act of love. I just wonder if that challenged, if that allowed Jesus to meet the challenge that was placed before him. We're challenged in a couple of ways in this first table. Just as Simon welcomed Jesus into his home, my hope is for you this week that you welcome Jesus into your home. That as the God of the universe looks across this planet and he looks for homes where his son is welcome, that when he looks at your home, he sees a home that welcomes his son in. Just as Simon welcomed Jesus in. The other challenge is this unbelievable act of worship that Mary showed by pouring this expensive perfume out over Jesus. To imitate this extravagant act of worship. It wasn't logic that caused her to do this. It was love for her Savior that caused her to do this. After all, love is not driven by logic. You spend a lot of money on an engagement ring and a wedding ring, guys. It's not real logical to do that, but you do that because you're driven out of love. A mother, it's not logical to allow your body to go through all kinds of changes and the sacrifice that you have to make to have a child and to raise a child, but it's driven out of love. And we look at Jesus' life, caring for those who were in need, reaching out to those that no one else would reach out to. That's not logic, but that's love. And so this Easter week, perhaps you can reach out, not in logic, but in love. Visit someone that's sick. Reach out to someone who's hurting. Forgive someone who needs forgiving. Love someone who is not very lovable. To do those things, we have to throw logic out the window and be motivated by love. When we read the stories, these stories in the Bible, we don't read them just to know what their life was like then, but how our life can be changed. And so now we look at the second table. On a Thursday evening, we move over a few verses in Matthew 26 to verse 26, and it reads like this. While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat, this is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." These disciples were about to encounter a Passover meal unlike any other Passover meal that they had ever celebrated in their lives. I want you to imagine with me for a moment that you're just a simple dishwasher at a restaurant. You go to work, you're in the back room, no one can see you, Knowing what's going on, you're just kind of by yourself, cleaning your dishes and getting the clean ones out. You got an apron tied around your waist. But one day, the manager comes to get you. A man came into the restaurant wearing an official-looking black suit, black tie, and he wanted to see you. He named you by name. The manager brings you out, and the man hands you an envelope, and you're a bit trembling, not wondering what's going on. You look at the envelope. It's one of those thicker envelopes with texture to it. Hey, this is unusual. And you look, and your name is there, but it's not on a label. It's not been printed by a printer, but it's been handwritten in cursive. Well, you know it's too formal to be a tax collector or a bill from Ameren or anything else. And the man says, please open your letter. He's very firm in his posture, and you wonder, what is this about? You open up the envelope and pull out a letter, and you look up at the man, and he's got a big smile on his face. And it's a letter from the President of the United States inviting you personally to come to the White House to be honored. And you think, what is this all about? And the man tells you, you've been invited by the President of the United States to be honored, and the President would like to serve you a meal. And you think to yourself, I'm just a dishwasher. Now you can imagine it could be whatever president you want it to be throughout history. You're invited to go and be with that president to be served. You are open to the invitation. A couple of weeks later, a black limousine shows up at your house. You dress up, you get in the limousine, and you head to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, where you pull through the wrought iron gates, you pull up to the side door of the White House, where more men in black official suits come out, open the door to escort you into the White House. You make your way down a long hallway. There's pictures of past presidents, furniture that's hundreds of years old. You're looking at the rich history inside the White House, and you just can't believe that this is actually happening. You're led into a dining hall where there's a long table with many chairs, but there's only one table setting. The man says, please take your seats. You sit down at your seat, and there's only one nameplate, and that nameplate reads, your name. You sit down, you look down at the fine china. You've never seen fine china like this before, ever in your life. You see crystal in the room. You think, I've never seen anything so expensive in all of my life. There's a fireplace right ahead of you. You see the beautiful mantle, and you continue to look up, and there's a painting, a portrait. And that painting is of you. Your crooked smile and your nose that you wish wasn't quite so big. And then all of a sudden, you feel a hand on your shoulder, and you hear a voice that sounds familiar. The voice says, I'm so glad that you made it. And you turn around, and there's the president. There's a dining cart behind him full of delicious foods. He breaks off a piece of bread and hands it to you. And he says to you, I'm so glad that you made it because I wanted to serve you. And you say, no, you're the commander-in-chief of the United States of America. I should be serving you. And he says, no, it's my privilege to be able to serve you. Now, that's never going to happen, right? But the commander-in-chief of the universe came to serve you. And when Jesus shared with his disciples on that Thursday evening, that meal that represented Christ's sacrifice, Jesus was saying, here is a gift that I give to you. And every week when we gather together to worship God on Sunday, we are afforded the opportunity to receive that gift and to be thankful for what God has done. You see, on that evening, Jesus went knowing that he would go to serve his disciples. It says that Jesus took the bread, he gave thanks, and he gave to his disciples, telling them to remember him, to do this in remembrance of him. And the Lord's Supper is a gift. A very precious gift that you and I are given. And so there's a few challenges today that I hope that you challenge yourself with through this Easter week. First is, will you invite Jesus into your home? You may say, I've done it a long time ago. renew that invitation. Perhaps you have yet to make that decision, and I urge you to be like Simon and welcome Jesus into your home. Welcome Jesus into your workplace. Welcome Jesus into your circle of friends. Welcome Jesus into your heart. Another challenge is to be as Mary was, giving an extravagant gift of worship, motivated not by logic, but through love. What a great week for us to show others who Christ is. And we do that by showing love. The other challenge is this. Let Jesus love you. We're a very busy people. We get very busy with our families, with our work, with our activities, with our hobbies. We get very busy. Communion is a time where we stop to pause, reflect, and receive that gift that Jesus gives. And I hope that this week you'll be reminded of the love of Christ and slow down just enough to allow Jesus to just simply love you. He's offering his love. Sometimes we've got to hit the brakes, so to speak, and allow Jesus to love you. We look at the book of Luke, and in chapter 12, we see a glimpse of what eternity will be like. This great banquet, this great wedding feast that God has prepared in advance for all of those who are in Christ Jesus. And here's what verse 37 says in Luke chapter 12. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. That tells us on this earth we have to be ready. How do we be ready? We have to have our faith and trust in Jesus Christ and be in service to him. And then it says this, truly I tell you, he will dress himself to serve, will have them recline at the table, and will come and wait on them. That's a picture of eternity. That one day, Jesus, who came to this earth to serve us, one day in eternity will serve us once again at a great wedding feast, a banquet, where we will find our reward in Jesus Christ in heaven. So this morning, my challenge is this. If you have yet to receive Christ as your Lord and Savior, welcome him in. Just as Simon welcomed Jesus in, he wants us to do the same today. If you've already welcomed Simon in, when we sing this song this morning, maybe you can make a renewal of what it is that Christ has done for you, the thankfulness you have for Christ in your life, and renew that invitation once more that Christ will be in you and in your home. Let's stand this morning and sing this song of invitation.